You're listening to Smoke Radio at the Movies here on Smoke Radio, your home of student sound. With Louis,
Tangier,
Charles,
Solly, Daniel.
Hello. Talking about industry stuff today, we've got lots to talk about. Welcome to the film show. Hello, how are we all doing?
Not bad.
Good, thanks.
It's all right, you know.
We have a new voice in the room.
We have a new voice in the room. Hello, hello. Introduce yourself. Who are you?
Hi, my name's Charles Solly. I'm a filmmaker and graduate from Westminster University of about 3 years now.
Hey, what do you do?
I tend to direct, but recently it's as an independent filmmaker, you end up kind of writing to direct, and then once you've directed it, you're editing it. And then I've taken to doing the score work as well recently, which has been the kind of focus. It's been a lot of fun.
Cool. How's everyone else in the room?
Not bad.
I'm Gucci, as the kids say.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you there. What was you saying?
I said, as the kids say, I'm Gucci right now.
You're very Gucci. Excellent. We like to hear that. And Dan?
I'm a bit ill, but surviving.
Oh,
good.
No. What have you got?
I don't know.
Hey, what? You got that corona?
Obviously.
No, yeah. Stop that.
Plough through it.
Yeah. Ploughing through it. Yeah. Very good. Very good indeed.
Ploughing strong.
So here on the film show today, we've got quite a lot to talk about. What's some of the kind of things we're going to be discussing today?
Yeah. Well, before, like, I just entered and they were like debating already about BBC licensing. It's a very interesting debate to have.
Oh, I've got bad taste in my mouth.
Should we go and talk about something light first and kind of get into it and stuff? All right, brilliant. So we've also hopefully like, if the like yeah, hopefully if the Wi-Fi signal is good for Tom and stuff, then we hopefully will be hearing it from him a bit later on, halfway through the show. So we've got quite a few topics to talk about today, including Love Island as well. So the main topic for our show is mental health in mainstream media. So Love Island, what place do these shows have in our society? Yeah. And what is the impact on young people's mental health? Should Love Island be cancelled? And also we're talking about the BBC licence fee as well. Why do we allow it? Is it value for money? Should we be forced to pay it? Also, another point which isn't on our agenda today, but actually I think was just something good to mention, is like what do we think students think of it as well? And students and young people, I mean, generally speaking, like what do they think about it? What else have we got as well on the show?
We have got Indiana Jones 5 rumours. So they are making it, but there are rumours around.
There are rumours around as to what's happening with the production.
Yeah.
And very exciting.
You've also got the Pattinson Batman first look you wanted to discuss.
Yeah.
Boom.
We've got some trailers.
Boom.
We've got some trailers to show.
We've got quite a few trailers indeed. We've got Stranger Things series season 4. Castlevania. I'm not sure how many of these we're going to get through. We're going to try as many as possible.
Yeah.
Definitely want to see Wes Anderson's The French Dispatch.
Oh,
talk
yes.
about that because that
oh,
is
yes.
so exciting.
I really wanted to talk about Castlevania. Cause
okay.
Do you have you watched this series on Netflix?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god, it's banging.
Is it the manga thing?
Yeah, it's.
Or anime? I don't know which one.
It's so cool.
It looked fun.
It is so cool and violent. It's nice.
Brilliant. So, excellent. So, if we can go on to our first. Topic. Also, we've got soundtrack of the week as well. Very, very exciting. So I'm gonna test you guys' kind of mental capacity for your love of film.
We've got
hopefully,
some good ones.
We've got some very, very good ones in store. I've got some really good ones. I'm quite a little bit cocky, a little bit confident about
okay.
it actually.
A little bit. My God.
A little bit. Yeah. Only slightly. So hopefully, it's exciting. So I guess our first kind of point is like Love Island and The Bachelor. What do we think about these shows? Because, I mean, like, the vast majority of people in the UK are obsessed with things like Love Island and stuff because it kind of feeds into that desire to sort of watch, sort of people watch and people gaze, isn't it, really?
See, I've never been into Love Island at all. I mean, that's just me, anyway.
I share those views. So what do we kind of think about this? Just kind of opening up a bit.
Not to disrespect, I just don't get into it.
Well, if you think about it, Love Island is something that dominates social media. And if you look at Instagram, you'll see how like a lot of girls dress a certain way, and they
what do you mean by that? That's kind of I'm not sure if I agree with that statement.
No. But in terms of like Insta famous girls, like the girls who are
could be guys
between
as well.
Like well guys as well, they all have they all have ASOS sponsorship, or they're sponsored by I Saw It First or someone like that. And they're all kind of, they're making a business out of this. And it's, which is good. Make your money. All day long, make your money, yeah?
I do not think they should have done it in the winter, though. Like, it was a summer program, and I loved seeing the beach babes, the beach guys. But now it's winter, and you got, it's quite depressing a little bit.
They're in South Africa, aren't it?
For them, we're sitting there in the cold, being, and it's a different vibe.
It's the drama in it. You love it.
I don't know if I would dress up in a sort of scantily clad way when it's freezing cold outside.
I would actually love to have seen that. Actually, if they went up to the Alaska and did this Love Island in Alaska, that would be sick.
Scottish Isles.
You've almost got the accent kind of pinned down there as well.
Not the Alaskan one. I don't know what that was, but
in Alaska, they would just get each other like in The Shining.
What's that?
Like cabin fever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It would be like, what was the Tarantino film where they're all in a cabin?
Hateful
Eight.
Boom. Yeah, like that wintry film with lots of snow.
Somebody's having sex in here, and I want to know who.
Yeah. Oh, my God. that definitely wasn't in the film, Charles.
No, it was...
In some ways, that's more, like, you make them more compact in a cold space, in a cold exterior. They have to be more interior with themselves, and therefore, they're more like... There's more meat to that.
Well, the reason we wanted to talk about Love Island is because it draws a lot of attention on social media, and as such, a lot of the contestants and presenters get a lot of attention drawn to them. And this is it's been positive because a lot of careers have been built on it, but it's also been negative with a lot of a few suicides, which has happened with The Bachelor as well. A few suicides. Obviously, the big news is Caroline Flack committed suicide
on the
weekend.
Really upsetting news, actually. This is news that Love Island presenter Caroline Flack took her own life last week as a result of just awful media scrutiny because of this ongoing trial that's happening with her being allegedly accused of assaulting her boyfriend.
Yeah.
Which is terrible, honestly terrible.
Is that it?
I'm not sure what the reason is.
We can't say that's directly the result. Like, that's part of it.
The result.
I feel like
this should
be more reasonable.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. I have to say it. I think that's a byproduct. It's not the main reason.
The media were definitely just hounding her into the ground.
Yeah. She's always seemed a bit cold, though. Like, out of everyone on that show, I found her very difficult to read. That's not to say I'm sort of skeptical that she wasn't always suicidal, but who is to know? That's not to take the blame off the media for doing these kind of hell hounding.
I have to disagree. I think I'm not sure if I share those views, only because I think that's more opinion-based.
Mr. Objective over here.
No, but I think I think you never know what someone's feeling and how someone is and stuff. And I think the media paints an awful picture of just about everyone.
Yeah.
To all regards.
It's a weird world to be in. Yeah. She's literally the face of this intense world. The last show similar to this was Big Brother, and that title more accurately depicts the kind of thing they're doing with the show, where they're kind of putting cameras in every orifice of everyone's so-and-so and just seeing what happens. And doing fiction film, you're kind of trying to operate in that fourth dimensional space to use time and space to tell a story, but they're able to do that on a very live basis on these crazy quick turnovers, and it's completely addictive. So it is fascinating what they're doing, but whether it's good for society in the long run, I have no idea.
I don't think so.
I don't think it is, especially like if you look at who these Love Island presenters like align themselves with. I don't want to be critical, obviously. I said get your money, but there's a lot of companies like Flat Tummy Co. and all these guys who promote kind of negative body images and overpriced surgeries to look, let's say, desirable, and they clearly advertise it to the younger generation. And as we know, like it's not a healthy thing for those kind of like. There's kind of expectations to be put on a lot of young people who don't know better. A lot of people think everyone in the world looks like people like Love Island and you don't, but like that really
I totally agree with you. I think it's so shocking how some people just think that their whole world is literally all around Love Island. That is the thing to aspire to be, both in terms of like appearance, personality and everything. I just find it shocking, but I think this is down to like the availability of content, the availability of like education. I think it's far more systemic in terms of people's own livelihoods and well-being. Like, we can't just sort of shunt people aside who have that as their main aspiration. That's just like completely unfair.
Yeah, and it's a bit like someone who's trying to be like an athlete. You don't realize that is literally a 1% of people in a world who try to actually make it.
Yeah.
And you need to realize, like, there are other things in life for you to do.
I love how
be happy.
Yeah. I love how much effort some of them put into their aesthetic, but sometimes it's often vanity. Also, there's a paradox with how those guys look, I find sometimes, because they got big tattoos, big muscular men, but then, like, they're sensitive whim-whams and got a lot of emotional issues going on, and it doesn't, they don't really get to back it up with their sense of character a lot, like, speak a lot of game, and then you see them shacking off with someone else just like that, and it's sometimes it's depressing, but it's definitely a hook.
It's definitely a hook. It's definitely entertaining. I think they're kind of feeding on that, and not really kind of sort of passing off good morals.
It's
certainly
just dopamine. It really is.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the thing. I don't like when reality TV show like first came about, was in Big Brother. It was a very experimental form of television. It was a very exciting form of television because, you know, it's all they put people in a room, they put cameras everywhere, hidden cameras, and they just see what happens and they make drama out of that. But I prefer to like separate the fiction from the non-fiction, and these are, I guess, they're reality TV show, but they're kind of not. They're constructed reality.
And
I don't like that.
Some of it is scripted as well.
I like there to be a distinction, so then people know, okay, this is a fake. Obviously you can look at a fiction story and see truth in it, your truth, whatever you perceive from it. But a non-reality TV show, you try and perceive truths from it. It's very, it's dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, if you try and do mockumentary while playing yourself, for instance, that's much more difficult than doing mockumentary while playing another character. And here these guys are like, right, I'm on TV, I'm here to cause drama, I'm asked to cause drama, but I'm also being myself. And so there's no sense of detachment. And so it's quite psychologically like dark in some ways, or can lead to that. Because you can feel very isolated and yet you're totally yourself.
It's confusing. Mentally confusing, because I guess at least with a fiction film you can say, okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
that exists, but it's fake. I know it's not. You can like see like the novelty in it, but you can't. I can't see the novelty in Love Island unless it was like full out fiction.
Mm.
Yeah,
I loved what Darren Brown did with the Big Brother meets zombie apocalypse.
Yeah,
that was
that
really
was brilliant,
really clever.
How did you find that?
I didn't see that.
What was this? Oh, it was. So he did a lot of social experiments and things along that vein, and people believed they were in Big Brother, and then he made it out to orchestrate that this whole building and the surrounding environment had turned into a zombie apocalypse, and just to see what everyone would do. They're all freaking out. So it was, and then the reveal at the end was just the utter relief, and yeah. They're good. Darren Brown's shows do a lot of them sort of things.
I haven't seen enough, I have to say.
That seems mean.
I think so.
It was mean.
Oh, they're so good, though.
Yeah.
As long as they had a good laugh afterwards when they realised. But that's what I can think to make it more ethical.
I forgot to say, it's like we were saying earlier, stuff about like Big Brother used to be quite an experimental format and stuff when it kind of aired in the sort of mid-90s, and you just remember even in the kind of early sort of series and stuff, like looking back, like it didn't have that kind of sort of tabloidy effect that it has now and stuff. Like even in the kind of Voice of God's own kind of accent and stuff, like played voiced by Marcus Bentley and stuff, like he had such like a sort of very monotonous kind of accent. It wasn't like,
well, this guy's fucking crazy. Wait, excuse me,
no swearing. It wasn't like Dear 36.
Yeah.
Morse of the housemates are in the bedroom.
I mean, back then people didn't know the morality of it. It was a new thing.
It was exciting.
People don't know, I guess when social media first came out, people didn't know the good and bad of social media because it just came out.
It basically went downhill when Channel 5 bought the show after Channel 4 axed it in 2010.
Well, the first Love Island, I was speaking to some American people I met on holidays, and he said, man, British TV, like, that first Love Island, they're allowed to drink anything, so it was like a zoo. Now it's kind of, it's dulling down, you know, but what I'm watching now is your parliament. And I found out that a lot of American TV have got really into watching our politicians because it's just...
I thought you were going to say Downton Abbey.
No, just because it's just broadcast live, and it just looks like a monkey cage.
John Bonker before he was, like, fired. Oh my god, it's some of the funniest stuff you've ever seen in your life. Like, watch that. Look at Parliamentary Crips and, like, see how they take...
He was
like,
the guy keeping order, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
See how they take the mick out of each other in Parliament. Like, I don't care about politics, but I love how, like, there's a lot of drama in Parliament.
Yeah.
Should there be?
You know, if
do you think they should?
100%
Yeah.
100%
People think it's trivial, tedious. They should focus on the policies.
Yeah,
I think that's not reality.
The building is completely.
You've got to realize these are human beings, man.
Yeah.
The building is completely counterproductive, right? So if I was going to make a tense room in a scene, like in direct a scene, I'd put people facing opposite each other, 180 degrees staring at each other, and that's how you cause conflict in a scene. If I was going to create unity and get a conversation going, I'd have a round room, like Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur stuff. But we're so hepped up on keeping the prestigiousness of our old buildings that we've put everyone in a room that's too small for the amount of people that actually represent us. They can't actually fit every single representative in the same room at once. So we are literally in an outdated system, very literally, the actual architecture of it. Mm. Russell Brand talks about that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Incites a certain lofty way of thinking to have these big echoey chambers. You know, if you were to speak in a room like this with that amount of people, it would feel so clustered. You'd all be so happy to patiently speak when you're asked to speak because you just have a headache. You couldn't shout over each other, you know.
I mean, yeah. When like there's a tiny part of me that acknowledges the great good and bad and ugly history of Westminster, the building itself. But what I would like do in a dream world is I would just evacuate the entire building. No one is in there. Just blow up.
Guy Fawkes stuff. I mean, we still celebrate Guy Fawkes.
I know.
Weatherspoons
fam.
So then just change the system, like rearrange it in a way to make it more.
Make it into Weatherspoons.
I'm not saying, yeah, I'm just like, get everyone out there.
I vote we make every building into a Weatherspoons. All buildings can become part of the JWM Weatherspoon brand.
Life will be
and
lit.
He'll be the richest guy in the UK.
Life will be lit.
No, I think
life would be amazing. I'm just waiting for Weatherspoon's Oyster cards, you know.
Have any of you ever watched The Bachelor? My brother watches it while he paints. It's kind of background wallpaper, as we call it. It's very different to the one in the UK, but
no, you're way different.
Comparison to like Love Island, it's about you have girls on there that are literally saying to the guys like, "I'm so pleased that a morally virtuous man like you still exists," which is so different to the concept of Love Island, even though they're sort of the same bracket in TV.
Yeah, but a lot of the girls have had like public mental health breakdowns. That's why I put them.
Yeah,
well.
it's completely strange setup because they're all fighting over one man and their sort of whole sense of self worth's on the line.
But there's a female one as well.
Oh yeah,
a bunch of men fighting over one girl.
Yeah.
Help yourself. Do you want any sort of things we've got here?
I prefer the Bachelorette.
I might have a cheeky flapjack in a moment.
I like it. It's weird. I don't know why.
You don't know why?
I don't know why.
What, flapjacks or Love Island?
No. The Bachelorette, the girl version of The Bachelor.
I think there's a structure to it that keeps you safe. Whereas when you're watching Love Island, I can literally have my stomach torn out of me where they're like, "Now we're doing this because we're going down on ratings and we need something new."
Yeah. I feel like I'm out. Start watching it again though.
My sister's like, trying to drag us into it like a TV addicted spider, and we've resisted. We might get back into it in the summer, but we'll see.
Very good, very good.
I've got one word for you.
Go on.
Why?
Just because if it's the same as last summer, it's about just taking part in a conversation. Like, I don't necessarily follow football, but if the World Cup's on with England in, I'm going to partake because it's part of the cultural conversation.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'm good. Oh. Yeah.
So let's move on to our next topic of the show, which is about the BBC licence fee. This was quite... We sort of came into the studio and stuff this evening, and it was a little bit contentious before the show actually came to air and stuff. And I was like, save it for the show. So it was such a good discussion. So Dan just kind of came in and stuff and was like, what's going on?
Get straight into it. But I was wondering, could we just go around and see everyone's stances on it?
Yes.
So
in a summary format.
Charles first.
Oh, me first.
Charles the first.
So this is about the BBC licence fee and whether or not people should pay it even if they don't want it, essentially.
Well, I mean, when I was at university at Westminster, like I got letters asking if I have a license because they knew I had a TV in the house, but I didn't pay it because I wasn't watching it and everything was fine. And I know there's a sort of a difference in the legislation as to how that stuff's run and the moral principles as a nation as to whether we should have BBC channels. And in my opinion, we kind of should, because I think it's quite a precious thing, like similar to the NHS, not as integral, but also, but in some ways it really upholds something that we as a nation have that's very rare. And to kind of slag that off and just say, let's just kind of Americanize this whole thing, let's get capitalism right in on our grills. It might be selfish, because me as a filmmaker, if I'm able to benefit the BBC or the BBC can benefit me, then that would be awesome, because I love a lot of the stuff they create. I love Sherlock, especially, for instance. And the Graham Norton show is such a brilliant thing for all people that are in TV and film to be able to partake in and see that we celebrate these characters and we don't quiz them or get too political with it. And I think that's worth upholding. So that was my view of it.
I like what the BBC stands for. However, I don't like how they operate with their enforcement of the license fee. For me, like personally, I no longer pay the license fee. I declared myself I don't need to pay it. And that was 2.5 years ago. To this day, I still get letters saying I need to pay it. And I've heard stories of people being threatened by the investigators that come to your house. Like they feel physically threatened. Imagine your old lady. There's two men come up to your house. Oh, we need to look in your house. They're not police officers. They don't have a warrant. But it's two men saying they have a right to search your house, and they pretend they have a right. They don't actually have a right, but they pretend they do. And it's not a healthy environment for the British public. Also, a lot of people during my research when I put this topic forward, I discovered. An average of about 30% of people who pay the TV license don't actually have to pay it.
Mm.
Why are you paying for something you don't use that does not benefit you? How does that make sense? How does that make sense? Imagine you bought your new house. You moved out your old house, but you're still paying your share of the rent of the old house. Does that make sense? You don't live there no more.
No, but like the idea of how we deal with legislation and then what we should be doing, I think they're separate things, like in terms of...
It's a broken system. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah, it does. Okay. Sure.
Here's what we need to do.
Either I don't want to slag it off.
I'm not... No, but they do do this.
I don't want to get rid of it. I'd like to improve it rather than go, it's broken, kill it. Let's go, it's broken, let's fix it. Clothes on this beast.
My point is, it's been broken for 40 years and nothing has been done.
Before we delve further, what's Dan's viewpoint on this?
Yeah, hit me.
I believe, like, a sort of program like the BBC should only have any license, any governmental requirement that you have to pay for it if they follow like a extremely non-biased quota.
Yeah.
And it's very hard for a show to do that. I mean,
they have been biased in the past, though.
Sure, and that's the thing. I applaud the BBC's attempt to try and be non-biased and all the things, and they've done a pretty good job, all things considered, but there's lots of caveats to that. In America, there's lots of shows that you can choose to go for, whether it leans towards your political beliefs. And they're having a similar thing in America, where CEN used to be this program for non-bias, much like the BBC equivalent, where they strive for that non-bias nature. But then nowadays, mainly during the Trump campaign and his election, there's been like a lot of bias to that.
That's interesting.
I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with the policies that they address. I'm not saying I disagree or agree with Trump getting elected or not. But they seem to have an agenda on that very clearly. And a BBC is a lot more subtle about it. But I don't believe if you're going to be even the slightest non-biased, the slightest bias, sorry, then you shouldn't get people to pay for it. You should get people to choose to pay for it if they want to, rather than letting it like exist in a sort of free market state. And if it succeeds, but because there is that even the slightest subtle bias, partiality, that means that I like.
This is a big question then, because
you should choose to pay for it if you believe that this show represents you as a person. Yeah. And if it does represent us as a person, then what they shouldn't even need a license. We should all pay voluntarily because we think it represents us.
But if it was so great, people would pay for it anyway.
Yeah, I mean that, and people. People should have a choice.
I definitely think that it is so great, and people should pay for the BBC because it does produce incredibly original programming and allows so many people, and the BBC employs so many people across all different creative sectors. And I think it's fantastic in that way. Though. So does Netflix, but in a different kind of way and stuff. In a different way, and it operates in a different sort of way. I think what the BBC do so well is that it really values the kind of cultural aspect of the UK, and I'm not trying to sound all out of touch and everything, because the UK is an incredibly diverse place, especially in the kind of wake of Brexit turmoil. It has to be said, but I think that the BBC don't necessarily. I think in this kind of struggle that what's happening kind of politically, I think the BBC are certainly not in touch, politically speaking, and are kind of up against odds against the government and are being underfunded in all different aspects. And I think that's causing the public to kind of start blaming the BBC, even though they don't know the full story politically as to what's happening in the country. And that's no one's fault exactly. I mean, that's the media's fault and the government's fault. If anything, it's not the people's fault. But I think generally what needs to happen and stuff is that there are people, like, just to kind of summarise the points that made in the room, there are people who perhaps can't afford it and stuff, and it should be funded by other people to kind of even out the sort of census, really. But I think it's more about that actually there are people who just generally don't want it, and there are people who have other viewing habits, like want to watch Netflix, I don't want to watch BBC stuff. So maybe a subscription model is a way forward, potentially, maybe not. Maybe it could be something else people can opt into for free. Who knows?
Licensing is basically
a
lot of this funding will come from people that are retired, because that is what they watch, that's been their habit their whole lives. So if we start introducing new things that confuse them when they're getting their programs, and that's funding a lot of cool stuff, then that could be a bit of a strange way of just destroying a lot of funding that's just coming in. We also need to, in my opinion, think of this on a less present axiom and more like a future trajectory, because we are, in a sense, how I put it, is we're the industry minus 10 years, 15 years, or however many years you want to put there. The idea that we have to be speaking to people that are 20 years our senior in order to get jobs is one way of looking at it. But in another way, people such as ourselves will be continuing to do our thing and keep falling into more and more relevant positions. And some of them might become the BBC, and so we'd be very influential in what that entails and what the BBC stands for. And so the idea of just going, we need to stop funding something because right now it doesn't have as much of a constructive way forward.
So you're saying that we shouldn't draw it back so quickly because tomorrow's another day.
Yeah. That there's potential for, because if we're disillusioned, I have kind of faith in that. Stephen Fry talks about the power of doubt, because it's a very unifying commonality that we all have doubt and disillusion. And so if that's the case, then it's just a matter of time before everything improves, because otherwise that's just
I like Louis on the panel here. He suggested a solution by surveying everyone in the UK via census. And
it's a difficult thing to do. It's a really difficult thing to do.
But
has to be done.
The best solution is to realize get rid of that 30% who don't need to be paying it, because you should not pay for something that you're not using.
Or can't afford.
Can we all agree on that?
Who qualifies as not being needing to pay it?
Well, the rules are, if you watch any BBC programs or live TV.
But then we also have the BBC, iPlayer and stuff like that. I don't know if that counts.
No, that counts as well. That's the BBC programs.
And you have
BBC
the World Service as well for international viewers.
Obviously, counts as well. Oh. Or BBC programs, BBC iPlayer, BBC Radio, any live TV. Even if you watch it on the Sky app, you still need to pay TV license.
Well, then that's difficult to get around, because people watch. I don't watch BBC, but I watch BBC programs on Netflix.
It's exactly what you're saying, Charles. It's a difficult thing to quantify, because it's kind of to do with. It's not just to do with programming and kind of what the actual content is, but actually in terms of viewing methods as well, whether people are watching it on demand and online, or whether they're watching it on terrestrial broadcast television.
Yeah. Also,
the old-fashioned way of doing things.
My point is, if you're watching on Netflix has already paid for it, and it's part of the subscription. So why should I also have to pay TV license as well?
Mm.
If I've already paid for it on one service, why am I paying it for another service? How does that make sense? My point is, what we should do is the census thing, where we realize, do you need to be paying TV license? Do you watch BBC at all? Yeah. Do you even have the BBC iPlayer downloaded on your, whatever, your tablet or your laptop? Because I don't. I don't know anyone in my family who does.
I really liked your point earlier, what you were saying about the idea of the moral ideal that BBC are responsible to try and hit should we be funded through taxes. When I was at university here, we did some interviews, and the producers were just these kind of brilliant left brain people that were just like, right, this is what we've got to do. And they ended up with two views, one of which was a more extreme view, or like less thought of view, and the other one was a more mainstream view. It was about the homosexual rights to get married. The topic in that respect becomes an interrogation as to what journalism is and how it operates. What we tend to do is this thing where we go, here's two sides of an argument.
Yeah.
Let's assume the intelligence of the audience, which is a really nice thing to do, but it's also a really dangerous thing to do. Let's assume the intelligence of the audience, and then we'll give them equal airtime.
Yeah.
But generally, the person who's more emotional or less logical or rational speaks louder, harder, faster.
Gets more listened to, in a way.
And gets more attention.
Yep.
And actually, it's not a balanced argument, because he's a 1% of an extreme viewpoint. Whereas if you're getting a balance, you should be picking two random people. Like, the concept of what balanced and what real and fair is
already kind of undone, because the person who's inevitably picking those people is actually already an ascertained viewpoint themselves.
Yeah,
and that's quite unfair, isn't it?
And the sort of more polite person was quite dumbstruck with being offended. So his topics were much more difficult to approach because he's already a bit hot-headed. So it was strange.
Hmm.
And journalism as a concept needs a bit of thought, I think, before we start saying everything, you know, BBC needn't have funding because we can't hit an ideal.
I'm not saying they don't need to have funding. I'm saying
it needs
to be improved badly.
100%.
So everyone's got 10 seconds on the panel. What is your solution to this issue? Go. 10 seconds, Charles.
Why did you put me first? Let's keep trying, people. I'm sure there'll be a solution. I'm dumbstruck with words. Sorry there.
Great.
Next,
okay. Tangier.
Do the survey. Make it clear to people. These are the rules, because it has not been clear for a long time. A lot of time.
What he said.
The investigators have like pretended like they're police, like they have a right to enter your house or something like that.
Okay, thank
you. No, let me finish.
Okay.
And also, like, I wanna say this, like, for me, because of my experience with trying to get out of pay TV license that I don't need to pay, I've actively avoided BBC programmes, and it's hurt them for me as a customer.
Fair.
Okay, very fair point. And Dan?
Don't police as much, be less biased,
yeah,
and just be good.
So with that, we're going to segue on to our next section of the show. Oh, what about me? Sorry, I didn't know I have an opinion.
You're important, mate. You're important.
I'm supposed to guide the show.
Do you have a controversial opinion that you just don't want to share with us?
I agree with Tangier. I think have a survey, get a census going. I think the BBC needs to be more in touch with people and their viewing habits today. Contemporary way of life has changed so much that I think the BBC will become irrelevant all of a sudden if they don't continue to innovate.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to you, man. You've got a radio voice.
Thank you. Cheers, Charles.
You sound
like
I want to wake up to you and have orange juice.
Oh,
it's good.
And maybe continental breakfast. Maybe.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's so sweet of you.
Also, if anyone from the BBC is listening, please stop sending letters to my house.
And please just listen to his beautiful voice.
I mean, we do have Ofcom listening. They do monitor the show because this is under Ofcom guidelines. So potentially
hurting the environment.
We're going to go and get our special guest, Thomas Rooney, on the line. But first, here is the brand new trailer. Well, it came out about a couple of months ago for the newly released Sonic the Hedgehog movie, after a very controversial statement that it was about its design or something. I don't know.
Just play the thing.
We will hear more about it in just a second.
It looked like trash.
And now it doesn't.
I'm Sonic, a little ball of super energy in an extremely handsome package. On my planet, people were always after my powers, so I came to yours. It gets a little lonely, but that's okay. I am living my best life on Earth.
Wah!
Oh, Wow! At the plate, Sonic! At the pitcher's mound, also Sonic!
Ugh, I can't with that guy.
Uh-oh.
Super Sonic!
Why are you hiding out in my garage?
They're coming for me! If they steal my power, they could conquer the universe. You have to help me.
No, I don't.
Please, it's life or death. Super Sonic!
Good morning, my rural chum.
Mr. Dr. Robotnik.
I'm going to give you 5 seconds to tell me where it is.
Wait, don't hurt him. Road trip? Woo-hoo!
This can't be happening to me.
Oh my God, stop the car right
what?
Now.
What? The world's largest rubber band ball? We gotta see it.
No, this is not some fun family road trip.
You're right. It was lame. Gift shop was cool, though.
Whatever this creature is,
I'm going to
uncover the source of its power.
Yeah. Hey.
Ah! I just thought you might like a latte with steamed Austrian goat milk.
Of course I want a latte.
I love the way you make them!
We gotta lay low. Let me show you how it's done. So should we get out of here?
Yeah, time to go.
I always want to do this. Nailed it!
Uh-oh.
Let's go!
Here comes the boom!
How are you not dead?
I have no idea!
Oh! Give me a big, fat break!
That was an illegal left, by the way.
Aw, this one is cute. Let's keep him.
Oh, come on!
You've got car insurance, right?
Why would you throw your life away for this silly little alien?
Good time.
He's my friend.
Let's go!
This is my power. And I'm using it to protect my friends.
Let's go! Let's go!
So, you're supposed to be Tom's best friend that he won't shut up about. Well, I don't see the appeal. That is very gross.
Let's go.
Okay, so that was Sonic the Hedgehog, and joining us on the line here is Thomas Rooney, who was here last week. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
How are you?
When you thought you'd heard the last of me.
We're just trying to get you a little bit louder and stuff. Can you speak a bit closer to your mic? I think Tanj, maybe put a bit closer.
My mic is literally right by my mouth.
Excellent. Okay, it works. Yes. No, it's all good. It's all fine.
How's it sound good?
Yeah, sounds fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
So tell us, what do you think about Sonic? So you just seen it in cinemas, right?
I saw it on opening day.
And what do you think?
Quite honestly, I loved it.
Yes!
It was actually very good. I liked it.
Because here's the thing, I grew up with the games, and it felt like just a massive love letter to fans of the games. They actually made a quality product, something Sega haven't been able to do since about 2011, and it's
shots fired.
I mean, there are parts where not all of the gag a minute jokes land. Sonic flosses twice, that could have been done away with, but it was a really, really good time. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Very good. And Tanj, you've seen it, haven't you?
Yeah, I saw it with my little cousin. She's 6.
Aww. Did she like it?
She liked it, yeah. She wanted, she's a Sonic fan as well. She was upset that Knuckles is not in the film.
Spoilers. Really? That'll probably be a sequel, though, wouldn't it?
No. Well, at the end, spoilers alert.
No.
There's like a Tails kind of, what do you call it, cameo thing?
Cameo thing?
Dude!
Yeah.
Call it
a cameo. That's like the most hype part of the movie.
These lot don't care.
Don't.
I guarantee you none of these people are going to... Are you going to see it then?
I'm going to see it.
I'm so not going to see it. I have no interest
not.
Whatsoever.
Probably not.
Sonic's maybe
drunk tons. Whether I see it in the cinema, that remains to be known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it. She enjoyed it. It's a good...
That's the main
I
thing.
I like the... There was like odes to the game. Like, what do you call it? Zone 1 in the first game.
There's an Ode to the Ring in there. I forget what you call it, the Green Mouse, something like that.
Mm. I'm really excited to just see Jim Carrey back in action, really.
Yeah.
No, he's been away for a long time.
He's been doing a lot of painting, hasn't he?
He's really good.
He just had
the Me Too thing as well.
He said something
to a reporter.
Was it
like something really sexual?
Was it something to do with Margaret Robbie?
No. He's talking.
I think before we delve into that, we probably need to clarify our facts.
No. During promo for Sonic the Hedgehog, he said to an interviewer, a female one, asked him, "What else do you want to do that you haven't done in Hollywood?" And he responded, "Well, you." Like, jokingly, of course.
What?
But he generally said...
But he's taken a lot of mushrooms recently and done multiple interviews.
It was televised. He said it.
So he just said Jim Carrey is cancelled.
It's not like he didn't say it. I'm not reporting fake news.
He just replied you.
He said it.
He just replied you.
That's such a multi-dimensional answer, though.
It was a joke. It was clearly
it's
a joke.
It's definitely a multi-dimensional answer.
It was clearly a joke, but it was an inappropriate joke.
I'm being innocent here, but did he want to be like a reporter? Maybe he wanted to do some reporting?
Maybe he was asking on her opinion of what he would want her to do next. I haven't seen it.
I think it's hard to quantify, and we shouldn't be scrutinizing something that we don't know about completely.
No, I'm telling you.
And secondly,
I watched the clip.
He could have been under the influence of some drugs or something.
It was clearly a joke.
Just the aftermath of something.
He was joking, but it was an inappropriate joke, is my point.
Very inappropriate indeed. Jim Carrey.
Don't tell women that.
Well, recently Jim Carrey's also done stuff where he's like, "I find this whole thing so superficial, you know, who am I? What is this thing? I'm human right now, but am I?" And it's like, well,
maybe he's
whatever he's saying has
crazy.
To be taken in the context of delusion.
I'd rather Jim Carrey keep creating Sonic sequels instead of whatever the hell art he's churning out on his Twitter. Like, have you not seen that stuff?
His girlfriend's died, though, so it's just been sad.
Weird.
His life is sad, man.
Life is strange. Life is very strange.
That's a really great game.
It's such a great game.
You started this conversation about Sonic because you were saying about the fact that they scrapped the original CGI, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. They scrapped it.
He looked like dog poo.
Well, I'm glad they scrapped it because right there in the advert it said, these are my powers and I'm here to protect my friends. And I feel like the CGI companies, by making them look accurate to the actual Sonic thing, it isn't owed to Sonic. If he looked like some weird scruffy thing, you'd be like, "Whoa, guys, what are you doing?"
He looks much better.
You can't draw Mickey Mouse wrong, so just don't draw him wrong.
Now that the Tails cat's out of the bag, as I was leaving the cinema, I said to my friend...
Tails looked fantastic.
They kept the original design. Sorry?
Tails looked fantastic, right? The design of Tails.
My friend, as we left the cinema, like if they kept the old Sonic design, how terrifying do you reckon Tails would have looked?
Oh my god!
Well, very good. We're going to crack on, I think, with the show, and we're going to go on to our next trailer, which is the Batman.
Are they staying online or?
I think we're going to say goodbye to Mr. Rooney, unless you want to chat about the Batman with us.
I came here for Sonic. I think I'll.
I came here for love.
All right. Well,
I came here like a wrecking ball.
Goodbye to you both.
There you go. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for your input.
Take care, Tom. Thank you very much. Take care and see you soon.
I feel you descent, Tom.
Was that a dig?
You're welcome.
Would you just call him a wrecking ball?
Let's take a look now. No, he's not a wrecking ball. Let's take a look now at the Batman, which is the first look trailer featuring the illustrious Robert Pattinson. That was very strange, actually. It was literally just music. So probably for you guys listening, it was just
music.
Guess the soundtrack.
Well, that's
not
been released yet.
Essentially, that was first look at Batman. Yeah. that was a first look at Batman, which is played Robert Pattinson, which we didn't really see much of. What do we make of that first look trailer?
Well, the rumors are that the bat symbol was made out of the gun that made his killed his parents. That's the rumors. If you saw it, it was very metallic.
Yeah.
Where the rest of the suit looked like kind of traditional Batman.
Yeah.
It looked a bit like the Arkham Knight suit if you ever played that game.
I'm not sure much about the DC universe. I'm not really a superhero film fan, but it looks amazing just judging by that. So I'll be awkward. Down.
He just walked forward and he was just like the camera was just hovering around him.
What's not to love?
And just
being very ambiguous, isn't it?
Being that awkward.
Well, Batman's always been that kind of all of his villains are dark and psychological and just anxiety inducing. So it was interesting. He's definitely got the jaw for it. I hope he's got the body for it and stops being so pouty because, you know,
I don't like the look of the cow though.
The cow?
Yeah, no, the headpiece. The cow is what it's called.
Cowl.
Oh, the cowl. Headpiece. Okay, cool.
I don't like the look of it.
Everything
else I like.
It'd be awesome if Jacqueline Phoenix and.
No way.
Patterson's character met somehow.
That would be so cool, but I don't know if that will happen.
It would be cool.
He's just some old guy.
If you look at
broken down,
if you look at Joaquin Phoenix, his version of Joker, it's not the type of Joker that goes into a fight with Batman.
Maybe.
Have you guys seen the conspiracy stuff on the Joker? Because as English people, I don't think we'd be as aware of the fridge concepts. But there's a famous type of fridge in America that you can't open from the inside. So animals have been found dead in them and stuff like this. And in the middle of the film, he gets into a fridge.
Yeah.
And from then on, everything kind of starts coming up a bit rosy in his favor. You know, he starts engaging in the hero story of his own life. And so the idea is that he actually dies halfway through and the rest is a bit of a dream.
Ooh.
Which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah.
Because he then kills his mum, starts an uprising, gets on the show he wanted spoilers. To get on. Oh, God, that was all spoilers. But Joker's oh done. Joker's been done.
Spoilers.
2 weeks is the threshold. Who cares?
Look, do you know what? I think everyone in this show shares the same opinion in that if you haven't seen it in 2 weeks after it's come out and it's had so much hype, then, quite frankly, spoilers, that's your issue.
I don't think 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks for TV, 2 months for film.
No.
Two months
is way too long.
2 weeks for TV and like big widescreen releases, anything art house, it's difficult. Like Parasite, do not spoil that. Don't even spoil it. It's even a year
after it's
been released.
It's difficult to put a number on it, really. Yeah, I mean, if you look at
10 years, never spoil it. Never. Yeah. In fact, that's the key. Don't spoil it.
Just don't be an arsehole.
What was Bruce Willis's film, Sixth Sense? Like, the fact that was successful because no one spoiled it for people.
Yeah.
You know, and if you did, that's the film done.
Directed by M. Night Shyamalan. I can never pronounce his name.
Real quick, what's your opinions on The Prestige?
The Nolan film?
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay. Yeah, it's great.
Brilliant.
I just want to check.
Well crafted, well made, well acted.
That's disturbed me for a very long time. Like, in terms of...
Aronofsky stole from him for Black Swan. The Prestige is very influential for him.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. Mm, yeah.
Definitely.
It felt like a big metaphor for comedowns for me with that film, where he's transporting himself and it's almost a flip of a coin when he knows it's going to go bad or good. And it's like, to get that height, you have to go through the low of, you know, killing yourself over and over again. Similar to like that story of Sisyphus, where it's like you've got to climb up the mountain to get the reward, knowing you'll fall back down again.
Yeah,
there's one film that's very eerily very similar to Prestige, and I think they released maybe in the same year. It's like the Illusionist.
Oh,
James Norton. Edward Norton, and they're very similar films. I think they were released in the same year, 2006. Am I wrong?
It's interesting how people kind of creatives tap into that same thing.
Which is better? Because they both have the same premise of a magician performing illusions, impossible illusions, and trying to figure out how they did it, and then by the end it's kind of solved but still ambiguous.
Well, one goes on a kind of more empirical idea of stuff, or tries to plug that line, and then the other one's like, yeah, he's able to fold wood in and of itself to create. Yeah, the Illusionists is probably more. I'd probably say is more theatrical. Would you?
Oh, yeah.
Edward Moore, Christopher Nolan's always kind of riding this line of it seeming within the realm of possibility, or kind of trying to bring you along that line.
Yeah, but then there's like a tinge of it, maybe a bit of spice.
Suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, takes hold, especially, not most of his films, but he did it in Interstellar at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like what he does, it's not like it's incredibly impossible.
is just beyond what we are aware of reality. I mean, like,
he certainly intellectualizes it first, so you're sort of really within the story before you start, like, you know, stepping back from the crassness of CGI, because you're already just hooked.
Yeah. I suppose I don't know if five-dimensional beings exist. I don't know if we can create harness gravity. So I don't. I guess the ending of gravity of Interstellar seems weird to us and a bit. What was that? But I guess how would we know what is and what isn't? Because we don't know.
It felt like a really good depiction of our awareness of where we're at right now as a culture in terms of. These ideas. It was a good depiction of, like, this is a fascinating assessment of how we can go forward through ideas of existentialism. You know, like, you just gotta voyage, man. You gotta use the drive. You gotta go. And Matthew Mahoney, explore space. Ad Astra did a really similar thing. It was really interesting in that
respect. Is that movie worth seeing?
I really loved it.
It's so worth seeing. It bombed. It didn't really have a big release. Well. Yeah.
Ad Astra.
Ad Astra
is a hidden little gem. I thought it was really
top. It's a hidden little gem.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an uncut gem.
It's because it's filmed. It's filmed similar to 2001: Space Odyssey in its cleanliness.
Filmed similar to First Man in a way, but different.
Right.
I feel like
I've failed as a human being because I still haven't seen 2001.
Because he won the Oscar. So
2001,
it was another role, to be fair.
It's a different movie.
This is a different movie completely.
Without further ado, let's take a look at our next trailer. And we're also going to get on the line the lovely Omar Hagag. Did I pronounce it right, Dan? Omar Hagag. Excellent. So we're going to be talking to him as well after the new trailer for Wes Anderson's brilliantly whimsical new film with an all-star cast. The French Dispatch, coming to cinemas this summer. Let's take a look at it.
Here we go.
It began as a holiday. Eager to escape a bright future on the Great Plains, Arthur Howitzer Jr. transformed the series of travelogue columns into the French Dispatch, a factual weekly report on the subjects of world politics, the arts, high and low, and diverse stories of human interest.
You don't think it's almost too seedy this time?
No, I don't.
For decent people.
It's supposed to be charming.
He assembled a team of the best expatriate journalists of his time. Berenson, Sazerac, Kremenz, Roebuck Wright. These were his people.
Just try to make it sound like you wrote it that way on purpose.
We take as the subject of tonight's lecture, Mr. Moses Rosenthaler. Certainly the loudest artistic voice of his rowdy generation.
Simone Naked Cell Block J Hobby Room. I want to buy it.
It's not for sale.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yes.
In short, the picture was a sensation.
The kids did this. Obliterated 1,000 years of Republican authority in less than a fortnight. What do they want? Freedom, full stop.
I'm naked, Mrs. Kremenz.
I can see that.
Lieutenant Lescafier.
He is the great exemplar of the mode of cuisine known as police cooking.
The aromas of the kitchen cast a spell, which was to be mortally broken.
As you know by now, we have kidnapped your son.
A message from the foreman. 1 hour to press.
You're fired.
Really?
Don't cry in my office.
Right before we get into it, I just want to say this has the best cast of all time. It has Benicio del Toro, Adrian Brody, Tilda Swinton, Lea Seydoux, Frances McDormand, Timothy Chalamet, Lena Kudrow, Jeffrey Wright, Matthew Ulrich, Stephen Park, Bill Murray, Owen Wilson, Lee Schreiber, Elizabeth Moss, Edward Norton, Willem Dafoe, Lois Smith, Saoirse Ronan, Christoph Waltz, Cécile de France, Guillaume de Gorme, Jason Schwartzman, Tony Revolori, Rupert Friend, Henry Winkler, Bob Balaban, and Angelica Houston, and some other guy that
I've never seen
pronounce.
A more.
And Kate Winslet as well.
Huge. Just to finish it off, I've never seen a more A-list cast since Endgame.
I mean, yeah, this is the be all and end all, I think. And we've got on the line the lovely Omar. That's not going out.
Okay.
Hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, is it working? Okay, that's good, that's good. Just making sure.
Hello, it's working all right. What did you make of the new trailer?
I've made a thing of watching it every day since it came out.
Oh my gosh.
I love wow. it. I've just, everything about it is perfect.
Why is it perfect?
The music is fantastic. I mean, it's just, I mean, everyone in the comments has been saying, like, did you think there could be a more Wes Anderson film? And the answer is yes, that's The French Dispatch. It looks like exactly what I want from a Wes Anderson film.
It's such a perfect little worldy kind of like, it's like the ideal film school film, isn't it? In a way. It's
absolutely,
kind of like beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah. If only the graduate films were like that.
The great thing about Wes is that he comes around every now and then, and so you just get to have this wave, and then it undulates and it comes back. You get to miss him, and then you get a whole big hit of him again. So it's clever.
Yeah, I think he's taking quite a bit of time as well between his films that he's releasing. So in a way, it's kind of like, oh,
what's the last
Wes?
One?
It's like you're amazing.
Time. Isle of Dogs, 2018.
He loves not too much time. That's 2 years though.
But then before then, it was Grand Budapest Hotel, 2014.
Yeah.
So we had a bit of a break.
That was long.
That was a long wait.
Wes Anderson making a new film is like reuniting with your old, very interesting cousin.
Yeah, yeah. Old, very interesting cousin is a really good definition.
That's that you welcome with open arms, despite the distance.
You eat like cold strudel for old time's sake.
Yeah, and you feed them a perfect platter of symmetrical like ham, cheese, and all other things that are just completely precise and perfect. Yeah, I'm very excited.
You have to have someone narrating their action while they're there.
Exactly. Yeah, and it has to be in the third person, and it has to be beautiful.
What's everyone's favourite Wes Anderson film?
Oh, my favourite. I mean, he is probably my favourite director ever. I'm going to say The Royal Tenenbaums is my favourite film of all time.
Okay. Fantastic Mr. Fox is my favourite of his, I think.
Controversial.
How's
that controversial?
That's a really good film. That's the best Roald Dahl film, with the exception of the original Charlie and
Chocolate
Factory.
That's it. Roald Dahl's influence in it is also
that's
fantastic.
True.
Yes. All right, let's go round. Omar, what's your favourite?
I just love the Grand Budapest Hotel, really.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's that's one of my least favourite, I think.
Waistband!
Really?
Fire Louis!
I just don't know. It's just like the narrative's all over the place. Absolutely. The characters are unfulfilling. I just think it's just so... I don't know. I think my least favourite of his is probably the Darjeeling Limited. I think every Wes fan can agree with me in saying that the Darjeeling Limited is a poor film.
Is that the one on the train?
That's the one on the train in India.
I love it. Sorry.
I don't know where it wants to go. It's
this is why I'm trying to get him fired. This is my main...
I understand your rebellion here.
It's
just a running joke. The cast in that film is phenomenal. Is it Owen Wilson, that one?
But,
and his brother.
But most of his films have the same cast, as in Owen Wilson is in nearly every Wes film.
Yeah, but they get a lot of screen time in that, and it's just the delicate balance of them. It's like a nicely brewed tea or something. It's good.
Grand Budapest Hotel is the future.
What's the future?
It's both it's the Wilson brothers together on a train, hating each other, loving it all.
Love it.
What's your favourite Tangier?
What's your fave?
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Okay.
Why?
It's perfect.
Perfect.
Also, Saoirse Ronan is bae.
Saoirse Ronan is bae. Mm. Nice.
Sometimes excellent. I don't like when you get a blank main character. So like when they use a character as a sort of narration piece, like a structure.
I do like Zero.
Okay.
Who is also in this new film?
Zero is lovely.
Mm-hmm. Who is Tony Revolori? Tony Revolori, that's his name.
Yeah.
Who Zero is played by.
Yeah.
Very good. Are we excited to see this? Are we all going to go out and see it?
Yeah, Blue's buying the tickets. You're buying the tickets, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to get all my indie brothers together. Try and get me like a BFI screening. Just embrace it. Yeah. Why not?
Embrace the love.
It's going to be so good.
Film Society will just be screening Wes Anderson films.
Film Society will be screening it. Yeah, I'm doing a Wes Anderson season.
Wes Days.
Yeah, come along, chaps. Come along. Anyway, sorry, a slight promo. Do we want to talk about anything without this film, about this trailer? What does it make us feel?
It makes me feel. I mean, all his trailers, I like them because they're so all over the place and crazy. You don't know what's going on, which is good. We shouldn't know what's going on in a trailer because otherwise you'd know too much than you should. So then when you watch the film, it's surprising and it's better enjoyed.
Very good.
I feel safe with it because his camera movements, you know, I don't know the way they do little pans up or just have everything neatly placed in the shot speaks to that need for someone who has social anxiety to just have a safe space, and he just gives that to an audience for a while, so it's nice.
Yeah, very good. Any final thoughts from Omar? No, I agree with you. I totally agree. I think you couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, sorry.
You're up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just in love with the fact that he's like finally embracing his like French New Wave inspiration. You know, he's going for it. It's like French Revolution of 68 is like the main inspiration, the failed revolution. So I'm quite excited just to see what he does with that whole side of history. And it's not necessarily true history that he's going for, but he's trying to evoke that time and place, and that's quite exciting.
Can you speak on that for a second? I don't know what you're referring to.
The 1968 revolution.
In art or in politics or?
Oh, just in general. There was like a, I think it was like a, I'm not too familiar with this, but we've done it in theory, and it's kind of,
okay.
It was a left-wing revolution in France that they, like lots of artists and like scholars tried to start, and it just didn't happen.
Oh, to be fair, the film's going to explain the world that he's exploring, so I don't know why I did that to you. Sorry.
A lot of French revolutions have failed.
Oh, they just love a good revolution. A good croissant, a cigarette, and a revolution. Yeah,
man. Well, nothing better to do on a Friday night, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I'm all for that. Egyptian blood flow and revolution anytime we can.
And also a lot of Wes Anderson films, particularly Moonrise Kingdom, is reeked with music soundtracks from the late 60s in France, particularly French soundtracks. So Moonrise Kingdom has a... Yeah. No, it's not one of my soundtracks. It's not.
Wait. I thought
are you
like
plugging something?
I'm not plugging something.
I thought there was going to be a transition to soundtrack of the week.
No, this is vaguely a transition to the thing, but it's not a Wes Anderson song that I've chosen, so don't worry.
Pick his brain, see if we can get ahead of the game.
Brilliant. Well, without further ado, should we move on to a soundtrack of the week? Thank you, Omar, for tuning in and stuff and catching up with us. See you next week, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be nice in person at some point. Whenever I can get in.
Well, you were busy this time. You were welcome, mate. You were.
It's not like we back. Actually, we shadow banned you, like Instagram.
Whoa. Right, thank you very much, Omar. So we're going to go on to a soundtrack
of
the week.
Thank you.
I'm going to go get ready.
Love you.
So the line's bad, but I'm just I'll keep saying thank you until the line cuts.
Oh, he's cut there.
Oh. And that's a cut.
Spicy.
So, Dan, tell us some things while I get myself ready for soundtrack of the week. I haven't done it in a while.
What do you want to know?
Just say stuff. Just fill the airtime.
Soundtrack of the week is the game where someone plays a soundtrack and we have to guess the song. Then we have to guess the movie.
Unknown Louis is going
to guess the movie, the song title, the director, and the composer. It's like a British panel show in which we care about points, but we kind of don't. And so we just, the person who gets it.
Evened out, you say John Williams and Hans Zimmer and get a shot or something.
Yeah, perhaps. But usually it's not the obvious tracks that we pick. It's usually tracks of films that we know, but others should know, but they don't because they're on Culture of Swines. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what we're going to do. And I assume.
I'm ready.
Are you okay?
Side note, Hans Zimmer is also bae.
Hans Zimmer is bae. Like, forever bae. And John Williams.
I was going to say, maybe not John Williams, but I love it.
I mean, I can...
He's too old.
Why?
He's bae like
talk goat. About
okay.
Bae is good. Bae means good.
So it's not like greatest of all time, like goat. Bae is something else.
No, bae.
Before everyone else.
There you go. So that's what I was looking for.
Is that what it means?
Yep.
Not a lot of people know these things, but I like knowing these things.
I'm ready. So I think all of you guys have a fair chance of getting these.
Few.
Huge. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Do we turn down this?
So we're going to play, if you turn down those faders
and
stuff, and we're going to play it for 20 seconds, and then we'll stop whenever you guess.
Do I put anything down?
Play it as long as you need to.
Just that? Just
go. Any guesses?
Oh god!
It's a music from an advert.
Oh, I know this.
It feels like
wait. Because you said it, the Royal Tenenbaums is a movie.
No.
Okay. All right.
Is it Wes Anderson?
No.
Feels like that recent Fish one by Del Toro, whoever did the Hellboy film. But it's probably just
the Shape of Water.
Shape of Water.
Is it Shape of Water?
No.
Okay, I was about to say we get shared points if it is.
Is it Big Fish?
No, it's not Big Fish.
No.
Is it a movie that you directed?
No.
That would not be allowed if it was.
No, it wouldn't
be allowed. Yeah, what is the genre?
And Guillermo del Toro is a good line to go
down. Pan's Labyrinth.
No, it's not Guillermo del Toro. It's a good line to go down in terms of it being.
It's the clue.
I'll give you a clue. It's a recent film that has taken the indie world by storm.
Is it Pain and Glory?
And it's also taken the Oscars by storm.
Oh, the Parasite.
Yes,
Parasite,
it is. Yes.
I saw it first.
It is the opening song in Parasite.
Well, yeah, I haven't seen that yet. I'm really looking forward to it, though. Everyone's speaking
by
big.
Bong Joon-ho. That's my first one. We've got two more. Are you ready?
All right.
Here we go.
3, 2, 1. Grand Budapest Hotel.
What was that?
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Hey, yeah, you got it. It's the Grand Budapest Hotel.
You got that straight away.
Yeah, how did you guess?
He watched it on repeat.
Because I know it.
You know it. Very good. And the last one.
3, 2, 1.
Oh, I can't get something off such a small riff. What's
okay, all right, we'll play it again. Any guesses?
No person.
No, it just sounds beautiful, modern. I mean, are we able to clue it, or is anyone got
it? It is also a South Korean film, same as Parasite. Not too long ago, quite recent.
Okay, Joe.
South Korean film is not my forte, so
wait.
For that reason,
let me Google
out.
South What's Korean film.
It is a psychological thriller, mystery thriller,
Good Boy,
drama thriller.
What's it called?
Old Boy.
Oh, I was going to say Old
Boy. No,
it doesn't
same
sound
director.
Like, same director.
Is it?
Wow, I'm in a ballpark.
Is it horror elements to it?
Train to Busan. No. The Handmaiden.
The Handmaiden's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, you got it.
I got them on the path there. I'm going to take some points.
Yeah, I think you should take some points mentioning Old Boy.
We'll also give points to Google because 100% just Google
Korea.
So.
Old Boy.
South Korean film filler.
That was so good. Well done very much for guessing. Well done very much. That's not a word. That's not a sentence. But hey ho, we do grammar here.
I'm proud.
Are we going to extend or is this?
I think. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for being here, Dan.
Okay.
I think we're gonna. Finito.
Like we're wrapping up.
Last week we did an extended edition.
We did. We were very naughty. We got told off big time.
Did we?
No, we didn't. No, it was fun. But
can't hurt us. We're too powerful.
We're 7 minutes over. Might as well go all night.
We might as well go all night, but we're gonna go. Thank you very much for tuning in.
People to slay.
Thank you, lovely. Yeah, thank you
Speak
so
soon.
Much for tuning in. On Smoke Radio, your home of student sound. You can catch us every Monday, 7 till 8 p.m., or in this case, 8:08 p.m. You can also tune into us on Spotify, iTunes, and Mixcloud as well on demand. Yes, thank you very much to Charles, filmmaker extraordinaire.
Hey.
Hello. Tangier, thank you. Thank you, film lover. Hello.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Thank you very
He's looking at me in disbelief. He's like, why can't this show go on longer? Thank you very much. I've been Louis Holder, and next week we've got more guests and more stuff happening. Thank you.
Right, cheers.